Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It's hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday, and I appreciate y'all being in the audience for hour one. It means you got Chris Landry, because it's Wednesday, and every Wednesday we visit with Chris Landry. Appreciate him coming on. If you didn't hear it, well, you have the opportunity to. You can get the podcast. You can have it delivered to your device every single day, thepodcastpark.com, or wherever you get your podcast, just click subscribe. There it is for you every single day. So talk with Chris Landry. Full segment about the ACC. A lot of things I wanted to bounce around with. I'm in that mode right now of ranking the other programs in the Atlantic for immediate and long-term challenging to Clemson. And Louisville is actually kind of taking it on the chin a little bit because in the immediate, it looks pretty good because that's how good of a coach I believe Satterfield is. And there's talent on that roster. But over the long term, I'm at NC State. Of course, FSU is the one, like, legit program for year-to-year consistent challenge. And I'm talking as long as Dabo Clemson continues to be Dabo Clemson. So we had a full segment about the ACC and then bounced into the SEC as well. Coming up in about 10, Mark Passwaters, a good friend of ours who covers Texas A&M for Rivals. We will be here. He will be here talking Aggies. I had mentioned the quarterback competition and what he thinks. Chris Landry believes it'll shake out like in August and what that offense is going to look like. We will cover some of that with Mark Passwaters as well. Then Zach Abelverde, guy who covers the Florida Gators for the Gainesville Sun. We will talk UF bottom of the hour, but right now we'll get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm pain relief cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
You will continue to get more of these announcements. Headline: Alabama schedules home and home with Boston College 2031-2034. It's going around, ma'am. Especially if you don't have a built-in non-conference rivalry game that you have to play every year. If you're Georgia, you're kind of off the hook as far as having to beef it up. If you're Florida or Florida State, you don't have to because you got that monster at the end anyway. Alabama plays Auburn. And so they have to play Auburn every year, but it's not only a conference game, it's a division game. So you don't get as much juice for that. Well, we got to bump up our schedule, even Alabama. I have no idea what the program is going to look like in 10 years or 13 years, but Alabama's going to travel to BC on September 13th, 2031. 3 years later, Crimson Tide is going to host the Eagles as the contracts are written now. Go ahead and close it up. I'm going to tell it's Chuck story time. I had another headline, and it was in – and you know what? I only had three stories today, and one of them was about recruiting decommitments. And I hate – off-season, there are so many commitments and decommitments, I don't even like telling those stories, but or including those headlines. But it was Georgia, and they lost 2 5-stars, Bear Alexander and Deion Bowie. So there was the headline. And then Luke McCaffrey just transferred to Louisville from Nebraska, announced today, yeah, I'm leaving Louisville. So those are my other headlines. Alabama and BC, if we can DeLorean back to, I want to say this was the opening game of Doug Flutie's Heisman Trophy season. And it was the season opener. And so what would that make it? 84? The season opener. And it was at Legion Field in Birmingham. And I was actually talking to a buddy of mine who was a Tennessee grad yesterday. And he's about 5 years older than me. And he should know this. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's right. We were talking about different stadiums and the fact that UAB, I think UAB, oh, God, Dan, check this, please. I think UAB plays one game at Legion Field and then goes on like a month-long road trip. And then they come back and they cut the ribbon on the new crib, I think. So I was talking about Legion Field, and I'll be honest, it's an ashtray. It's awful. It's terrible. And it was paid for. That was the big attraction to Legion Field for the city of Birmingham. But UAB's got their shiny new place opening up, and so they won't be a tenant anymore. But it used to be, and so my buddy and I, we were talking about the new stadium that UAB has, and he said, do you have any, like, lost, like, nostalgia or lore? What do you got, Dan? I can't hear you, Dan.
They're going to play in the Montgomery kickoff, which is going to be September 1st against Jacksonville State.
Oh, they're playing
State.
At the Crampton Bowl.
They're playing at the Crampton Bowl, and then they're going to go to Georgia. They're going to play at North Texas.
That's
and
what
then
it is.
At Tulane.
Yeah.
And then October the 2nd is Liberty.
Okay, so, yeah, they're playing in Montgomery. That's right. And not even at Legion Field. So, and I'd said for years that, I mean, I know what the value is. I was doing games there, UAB, on that kind of bleached out by the sun, kind of grayish green turf there. So it used to not be like that. And so my buddy was asking me, we were talking about the UAB stadium as well, and as well as their schedule. And he said, do you have any nostalgia for Legion Field? And I said, for the games and the players and the coaches and the fans and the people I was with. And I was like, absolutely. But it's not just a place. It was also a time and a place. And Legion Field, when they played BC, I think it was the opening game. I guess it would have had to have been the opening game of the 84 season, I think. And Alabama had an unbelievable running back named Kerry Goode, kid from Town Creek, I believe, and hurt his knee on a kickoff return. And he would have been the next great running back, I believe. Ricky Moore never able to get – just it wasn't supposed to be just a single back like he became. And the whole Alabama season just kind of went sideways. But that was Doug Flutie in Birmingham. And why did they play in Birmingham? Well, because it was a big game. It wasn't just the Iron Bowl. Alabama play all their big games. They play Tennessee. Go back, look at any Tennessee highlights. They didn't play at Denny Stadium. They played at Legion Field because it was bigger and had AstroTurf and lights and – ABC just knew how to plug in. So it was all the games. They would play Georgia, Legion Field, LSU, Legion Field. Doug Flutie and BC coming in? Nah, we're not going to play in Tuscaloosa. Move it to the big, nice stadium, Legion Field. Well, it's been long enough since that was the nice stadium, and so UAB and everybody else has kind of left.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.
Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It is June 9th, and ain't a single team in Division One, what we used to call Division One, that won't be portaling over the next July, August, 3 months. Not a single team out of the 130 who play FBS football, not a single one will advance the next 3 months without portaling. Now, I'm saying literally every single program will have two or three or four or five players jump into the portal. Everyone, no exceptions. I don't know how you're going to portal coming back the other way. I mean, Dabo's Dabo, and he's like, oh, we don't do that. Okay, maybe now we do. But everybody else is like, heck yeah, we portal. Want to bring on right now a guy who knows, I tell you what, about as much as you can about the Texas A&M program, and always appreciate him making time for us. From Rivals, it is Mark Passwaters. Mark, how are you, brother?
Hey, Chuck, how's it going, man?
Doing all right. Texas A&M, do you expect them to portal some more as far as guys showing up, coming to College Station?
You know, I think they'd be hard-pressed to do it. I don't think it's necessarily due to numbers. It's just find a guy in the portal that's really going to be an immediate asset to your program. They saw one in Jameer Johnson from Tennessee. They got him. Outside of that, they've been fairly inactive. I mean, they went after the kid from Marshall, the All-American guard, who ended up at Notre Dame. But outside of that, I mean, you take a look at the laundry list of players in there, and it's hundreds and hundreds. But they're in one of those rare positions that top teams get in where it's like, do these guys put us over the hump? Is this a player that can help us win a championship now? And honestly, as many good players as there are in the portal, I don't know if there's one or two guys out there that really do that. So A&M is largely probably going to stand pat.
Let's talk about defense, because lost a really, really good, really, really big one up front. And I have an opinion that the more I look at, because this is the time of the season. I mean, you know this, Mark. This time of year where you can do some deep dives on just silly stuff that you normally wouldn't have time for. I think the Texas A&M, specifically the defensive line, just that unit, I think it'd be better this year than it was last year. And I want you to talk about DeMarvin Leal. And I have a contention. I believe that kid was discriminated against because he's so big, yet he is a defensive end. It's almost like confusion about people who want to vote for all SEC teams.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I thought it was offensive that he didn't make it last year.
Yeah.
I mean, you take a look at the second half of the season, there was no defensive lineman in the conference that was more effective than he was.
Great.
You know, you got a guy who's 295 but runs like an end, you know, as the bulk of a tackle. You know, so people are, like you said, they're a little confused on where to play him or where he plays, but he's an end all the way, and he's been a problem for left tackles. So that's why he'll end up being a top 10 draft pick, probably. But I think that your argument that they could be better is true, because they're going to have Michael Clemens back, and if he can stay healthy, this is a guy who had 4 sacks in 5 games. And if you see the cover of Dave Campbell's Texas Football, you don't want to be in a dark alley with this guy. He is shredded. It's ridiculous. Then you get Tyree Johnson, who started half the season. He's your primary backup. So you're good at end. You got McKinley Jackson, who's 335, and they're going to put him in next to Jaden Peavy, who's 305. And then they've got guys behind them that are just as big. They have the ability to go 3 or 4 deep all across the board up front, and I think that they're going to be very tough to run on. And if they can get, you know, a really elite pass rusher, they're going to be very, very dangerous.
All right, I was talking to a buddy of mine who he's a fan, but like he's one of those like really drills down sort of fans. And so you'd mentioned the transfer from Tennessee on the offensive line, and of course, you know, Godzilla's coming back, Kenyon Green, and so there's talent there, but there's also 4 guys that left for the NFL. My buddy's contention, and again, this is just a guy who went there. His contention is that Jimbo finally has this roster turned into a Jimbo roster. And he said, I'm not saying losing 4 studs on the offensive line won't hurt you. He's like, but he's got the roster set up. He's got the kind of players he wants. And I'm like, dude, you look at it closer than I do. I said, but I'm going to ask Mark Passwaters about that. Talk about the offensive line specifically as an example of Jimbo, quote, getting that whole roster the way he wants it.
Well, you've got a bunch of very big fellas up front. You know, you talk about Kenyon Green, you got him a left tackle, 325. And then you're going to move inside. And Aki Ogunbowale was probably the best guard prospect in the country in 2020. He's 310. Luke Matthews is 320. Layden Robinson is 330. Jameer Johnson is going to come in at 305. These are big guys. I mean, you remember the Hogs. I mean, these guys are boars. They're bigger than regular Hogs. I mean, they're just massive. But they're also quick on their feet. They run block extremely well. The big question is, how quickly can they assimilate as a unit? You know, in terms of individual talent, this is more talented a group than the 2020 bunch, who was a finalist for the Moore Award. It's just whether or not they can mesh quickly enough and have everything go their way. But, yeah, they're physical, they're mean, and they're really, really big. And that's Jimbo's theory. You got to have that to play smash mouth in the SEC.
Follow this man on Twitter at MVP Rivals. Mark Passwaters covers the Aggies for Rivals. And you mentioned the time to gel out, you know, at the outset of the season. Colorado is a real opponent. They really are. And Arkansas is way better versus what we've seen recently than even people realize when it was the warm fuzzy at the beginning of the season. They're getting better. Having said that, it's a doable opening month for whoever the starting quarterback is. And I was actually talking with somebody else the first hour about it. And, you know, his thought is also Haynes King. And they're going to try to mash and run the ball a lot. But that first month of the season, that's really workable for a new quarterback for the first time in 4 years.
Yeah, I think that it works favorably for them. You know, certainly starting at home with a team like Kent State, then you've got New Mexico. But going out to Colorado, that's going to be a challenge, but it's not a terrible one. You've got a Pac-12 team who's, you know, middle of the road. They started off well last year and then fell apart against, you know, the quality part of their schedule. You know, Colorado's certainly a team that is kind of in a rebuild mode themselves. They lost a lot to the portal. I think that is a good opportunity for someone like Haynes King or Zach Calzada. And then you go and you play Arkansas, who talent-wise is not on your level, but they act like that's the Super Bowl every single year. I mean, they give A&M what for every time they play in Arlington. So that'll get them kind of that mental challenge. And then you got Mississippi State before you have Alabama. So, you know, it sets up well. They should be able to get that line meshing, get the quarterback some comfort, and, you know, also break in some potentially very talented receivers. And the tight end that you and I have been talking about forever, Baylor Cuff, yeah, will be back. So, you know, you add that with Weidemeyer, and whoever the quarterback is going to have some serious weaponry.
Mark, and I want you to take the quote, the rivalry with LSU. I want you to take that little big picture, because I regularly talk to folks who think, like, somehow it started with the overtime game and souvenir cups and whatever else. And I'm like, guys, I was a freshman in college in 1986, and there was ish going on with LSU and Texas A&M. They weren't even same conference then. Give folks a little bit of a kind of shine a flashlight on that series, because it's not a new rivalry.
Oh, no, it's a rivalry that has lasted for decades, and the enmity actually increased when they didn't play. You know, when this thing started back in the 80s with Jackie Sherrill and then R.C. Slocum, you know, LSU won consistently, and then all of a sudden the tide turned, A&M started bashing them, and LSU decided that they didn't want to play anymore. And A&M fans to this day say that LSU owes them money for breaking the contract. LSU fans say that no such contract exists. But, you know, the bitterness existed there. Then LSU beat A&M in 2012 and kind of threw them off the national title hopes with Johnny Football. And then LSU just absolutely smashed them for 5 years. And at that point, A&M fans were in a boil. And then, of course, you have 74-72. And then LSU fans are like, hey, that was our game.
How dare you make a cup? Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, yeah, so I think that, you know, certainly after last year when A&M kind of beat them up in Kyle Field, you know, the disdain is now mutual.
Yeah, now, like I said, anything where you can turn into that next level like A&M did immediately in 12 with Alabama, I am all for it in the Southeastern Conference. Mark, appreciate the time, man. It's always good insight. Thank you.
No problem. Take care, Chuck.
All right, Mark Passwaters again from Rivals. And, yeah, when they weren't even in the same conference and weren't even playing. Now, the weird thing has happened. I can't comment on this with authority, but I'm saying not weird, unexpected. Texas A&M and Texas aren't playing, and it's almost like Texas A&M to. There are corners of Texas A&M nation that have sort of moved on. Oh, Longhorns, please, we're in the SEC.
Oh, we're not your little brother anymore. We tell you what we do, not the other way around. That's 100% what it is.
Absolutely, keep it up with the Joneses. What's the quote? We are the Joneses now.
The Lost Odds, yeah.
We're in the SEC, man. And so it's just a really, really, really just unexpected, because for, I don't know, like 90 years, Texas not only ruled that state, certainly the rivalry. I mean, that was not even a question, but the state. And for periods was either doing that with college football in general or certainly in amongst that discussion on a yearly basis. And it is as far from that as it has ever been.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And I've told a story before. It was the day after Thanksgiving 2004, and I was broadcasting from a Starbucks in Athens, Georgia, and Damon Evans, who was the AD at the time, came by the broadcast. It was the day before Georgia and Georgia Tech were going to play. And so this is November of 04, and he's talking about the indoor facility at Georgia. And it's coming, and we're raising money, and we got plans being drawn up. And he had been gone 7 years. Mark Richt had been gone. I mean, like, Kirby's looking around going, all right, now we're going to do things the way it's supposed to be done. Now we're going to spend on facilities. That was 2004. If you remember a story from about 5 years ago, Florida's going to get themselves a shiny new crib. And it always amazed me when I would go cover practice in the state of Florida, like, because it's going to rain, like, literally every day. Beautiful day in Florida, low 80s, a little bit of a breeze, 4 o'clock. It rains for 15 minutes, just enough to get your football pants wet and make everything humid. And then you practice for another hour. And every single afternoon, I'm like, why didn't anybody have indoor practice facilities? Well, Florida announced it like 4 or 5 years ago, and their shiny new crib is actually going to open. And they're talking about basically a year from now, 9 months from now. And they're going to be like everybody else, and this one's going to be nice. $85 million, I believe, is the price tag. I want to welcome on now. Guy does a great job covering the Gators. Love having him on from the Gainesville Sun. It is Zach Abelverde. Zach, brother, how are you today?
Chuck, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Not as good as Dan Mullen. I saw him autographing an I-beam that they were laying in place over, like, the front entrance. Talk about this facility that's been talked about and talked about and talked about. Talk about it a little more now that it's kind of real.
No, it is real. Like, you actually go out there and they have steel beams up, and they put the final one in place yesterday, which was the topping off ceremony. And you had Spurrier out there finding the beam, Mullen, like you mentioned, Scott Strickland, and just a big crowd out there, all the construction workers and stuff that have spent, I think it was 50,000 man hours over the past 70 days from when the first piece of steel went up 70 days ago to now. And they first started construction on this in June 2020. So it's been a year-long process, and a lot of changes really from the onset. I mean, you mentioned about 5 years ago when they started talking about building a complex after they did the indoor practice facility. And initially, Chuck, they were going to do it over by, like, the track field.
Yeah.
And it was going to be not the space that they have now. And shout out to Chip Howard on UAA staff. I mean, he kind of made the suggestion one day, why don't we just move the baseball stadium to a different part of the campus, and that'd be a perfect location for the football building. And the rest is history. And, you know, you look at what they've done so far. I mean, this was really, I think, needed for Florida. I mean, obviously, when we're talking about facilities, you can make an argument about what all is needed. But in terms of where they were, as far as their peers and the elite of college football with what they have in facilities and kind of what they have in the works, Florida needed kind of to get on an even playing field. And that's what Spurrier talked about yesterday when I asked him what he thought about it. Because, I mean, this guy has seen his whole campus that he, you know, played for and coached at go through a lot of changes the last 5 years, because it's not just this. They did the renovations at softball and basketball, and they built the new ballpark. So it's just, they've poured so much money into facilities dating back to 2016. It was long overdue. Scott Strickland certainly bringing what he did at Mississippi State over to Florida, I think, has helped. But it was a cool moment for him and Mullen. You know, they, as you know, Scott, they kind of spearheaded the complex that they built at Mississippi State in 2013. So these guys have done this before, and now they got to take kind of that experience. And they also went to, like, Google and Apple and all these corporate headquarters to see, well, what did they do when they built their buildings? And they put a lot of thought into this to kind of get the best product that they could.
And, you know, it's funny what you're mentioning there, because at my alma mater and then other play, when I go around to games, I'm like, I'm telling you, for the past decade, I'm like, wasn't there a recession going on? Because all I see is construction literally everywhere, massive projects on campuses everywhere. And Florida is not getting left behind, that's for sure. All right, let's talk about something that's kind of sobering to me, because as mentioned earlier, this is the time of year, and I'm sure you get to do it as well, like where you have sort of a weird idea. You're like, if I just had a couple of days, I could drill down on it. Well, that's what I do now. If Florida has a first-team All-SEC player this season, who's the most likely player for that to be? Because I couldn't pick him out.
Right now, it'd be Kyrie Elam. Now, if you're
offense,
talking about
offense.
Oh, offensive side of the ball. That's a good question, Chuck. I mean, if you're a Florida fan, you want to say Emory Jones. You know, if Emory Jones, now first team All-SEC, he probably won't be, because I think there's some other guys that get that honor at the end of the year. But I don't know, man. I mean, I would probably go with Jacob Copeland, although I don't think he'll be first team All-SEC. I think there's a few more receivers that are a little bit better than him. But he would be my guy. He'd be my pick right now. I think Florida – I can tell you right now, Florida, Chuck, Florida is a big fan of Jacob Copeland. And based on what he did this spring and just his skill set and kind of where he stacks up in the receiver room, I think he's going to be a big focal point of their offense this year.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, it's kind of like a declaration. Well, just because you're not first-team all-conference doesn't mean you have a great year. But that's kind of – I mean, Florida's not about having warm fuzzies and pats on the back. And you're right. It's a tall order for a guy like Emory to have a, quote, better season than Matt Corral, JT Daniels, et cetera. Continuing with Zach Albaverde from the Gainesville Sun. Work out the running back rotation. Close your eyes and tell me what happens beginning in September, Zach, because – I was looking at some of the talent there, and I'm like, it may be a case of there's so many kind of hands dipping into the pie that it's hard for anybody to really emerge and have a great season, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, there's not going to be a feature back. I don't think that'll be the case. And honestly, I mean, I was out there yesterday, or Monday, I guess it was, when Florida had their first summer camps, first time they've had recruits on campus in a year. And in between camps, well, they're doing player workouts, and here's DeMarcus Bowman running on the field with no knee brace, looking like $1 million. It's a transfer coming in from Clemson, and he's probably the fifth guy on the depth chart. You know, that's just kind of where they've recruited at that position, and certainly you're going to have the three-headed monster of Davis and Pierce and Wright. I think those three guys are the bell cows, but really adding Lingard and Bowman, two transfers, five-star transfers coming in. I think Lingard, he didn't get to go through spring last year, which he would have if it not been for the pandemic. Also still coming off of that injury he had in Miami. I think now he's, with a year on campus, is kind of ready to emerge and have a role in the rotation. From what we heard, he was one of the most impressive players and standouts from spring. Broke off several long touchdown runs as a guy that was on the UM track team. So he's got that kind of speed, as does Bowman. So I think for them, you know, their contribution and their opportunity to get carries is going to come if they can enter the game and be a home run threat. Because those other three guys are not that. They're going to catch passes out of the backfield and kind of be more of the every down back. But, I mean, I do think you're going to see four or five guys involved in the rotation. Pierce will probably be the one that maybe starts the most because he's the senior and kind of has that seniority. But they're going to, I think, ride the hot hand some games and really mix it up.
I got a question about Naquan Wright. How much of – the weird thing is, I remember when Percy left, I had a buddy of mine, a Florida fan, like, who's our next Percy? I said, stop talking. I was like, there's no next Percy. Well, now it's, who's our next Kadarius? I'm like, folks, it's not easy. All right, so I'll ask you, who's the next Kadarius? Could it be Naquan Wright? Could it be somebody else?
No, I think it's going to be Copeland. I think Copeland
– wow.
And when I say the next Kadarius or next – the next guy to be featured in the slot position in Dan Mullen's offense. That's what we're talking about. You know what I mean? That's what Percy Harvin was. That's what Kadarius Toney was. that's going to be Jacob Copeland. Now, it will be a bit of a change because he has kind of been the outside receiver and started all 12 games last year, 11. He missed the bowl game with COVID. But he spent this spring kind of working in that H spot and doing a lot of stuff in the slot. He's already kind of in the last couple of years here and there got some jet sweeps and stuff in games. So they've kind of been grooming him for this role. But I do think he's going to be a different player than Tony. He's definitely not as shifty. He's not as elusive as Tony was. He's much more of a put your foot in the ground and get north and south type of runner. But he's going to be the guy that they use in that role. You know, what type of numbers he puts up, how effective he's going to be, I think remains to be seen. But I know that they like him a lot. And I think, obviously, to have somebody like Kadarius Tony playing that position the last couple of years is a big reason why I don't think we've seen Copeland featured as much, but this is his time to shine without a doubt.
All right, last thing for you. And again, surprises abound in 2020. It was what it was, but Florida's kind of easy to run the ball on, and that's not really what I ever expect from Florida. Can that be better?
Yeah, that has to be better. It has to be better. I mean, honestly, they got to be better across the board. They had the 100th worst pass secondary in the country last year. So it's, you know, it's the run defense. It's the pass defense. It's crazy as bad as they were. You mentioned first-team All-SEC. That Kyrie Irlen was a first-team All-SEC pick last year because he was, like, the only bright spot of that whole unit. But, you know, you bring in the grad transfers at defensive tackle. If you're Florida, you're hoping that Shelton coming over from Penn State and Newkirk coming over from Auburn, both of those guys are going to step right in and start, that they're going to be able to not only provide an immediate impact, but maybe upgrade that position a little bit from what the Gators had there the last year. And then obviously, you know, what Todd Grantham has in terms of his edge rushers and Buckeyes, there's a lot of depth there. You know, and Brenton Cox Jr., the transfer from Georgia, he was All-SEC according to one publication last year. I think he's got a chance to make a jump this year. I mean, he's got like four or five early mock drafts, which don't really mean anything, but about four or five of them have him pegged as a first-round pick, which I was a little surprised by. But if he plays himself into that type of potential, I think Florida's got a chance to be better up front in the front seven. But just across the board on the back end as well, Chuck, I mean, they cannot be worse. I mean, I was talking to one of their defensive players yesterday at camp, and he was out there watching all the recruits, and those guys are ready to get back on the field and kind of show that they're a better unit than what they showed last year. And, you know, that remains to be seen. But again, I mentioned some of the numbers and where they ranked. They can't get much worse than they were last year.
Gatorsports.com. That's where you're going to find Zach. Appreciate your time, brother. Thank you.
Absolutely, Chuck. Take care, boss.
All right, Zach Abelverde again, Gainesville Sun, Gatorsports.com. And you just – it's one of those – there are times you're watching college football and you know what you know, and like last year is a perfect example. In this case, I'm watching Florida, and I'm like, well, they're wearing Florida uniforms, and I know that's Florida Field, big F down on the 35-yard line or the, you know, the Gator head or whatever. And so I know what this is, but – this can't be Florida's defense because it's too easy to run. And now the thing about the pass defense, that surprised me as well, but I just knew they had talent there. And everybody throws the ball today. And so everybody's getting something busted on. I mean, Nick Saban's like, how do we stop the pass better? Stop the run? It really, really surprised me. And so what did Dan Mullen do? Made a priority of it. Went out to two other Power 5 programs and said, I'll take your grown man tackle and I'll take your grown man tackle. And so that's who we got. Was it Shelton and Daquan Newkirk? So that's the best chances they got inside. And, again, as he said, they're both going to start because if you don't stop the run, here's the thing about it. I know everybody loves to throw the ball. If you can't stop the run, you can't get your defense off the field. And there is nothing more deflating than when you get to like a third and two, a third and three, and then suddenly you look up and you're like, dadgum, it's first and 10 again. There is nothing more deflating than when you can't stop the run. It never ends all day long. So appreciate Zach's time. We break. Wrap up next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com. And then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
None of us are happy, not just us here on campus, but none of us in the Pac-12 are happy about these early season, early starts. I think it shows a lack of understanding of what we have to do with our student athletes. I think it shows either lack of understanding or complete disregard.
David Shaw, head coach at Stanford. I'm a big fan. Going a little far on that. He's talking about the season opener. Saturday, September 4th. Stanford and Kansas State will open in Texas at a neutral site, and it will be a noon kickoff for, like, people who are where I am right now. It'll be an 11 a.m. kickoff for folks who are in Dallas right now where the game would be. David Shaw's point is it will be a 9 a.m. kickoff for people who live in California, like our players. Body clock-wise, 9 a.m. Now, he's right about that. However, there are a couple of things at work here. First of all, this is the back end of a home-and-home, and they already had their home game. So Kansas is like, hey, we'll sell it to a promoter. And so we got a neutral site thing going on for our end. You can play your home game wherever you want. Stanford's, hey, where are you going to play yours? David Shaw's like, we're going to play in Palo Alto. Where are you going to play yours? Texas. You're getting paid, dog. And so Kansas, so I'll put it this way. This is an advantage because you don't have to play on somebody else's campus. And by the way, Kansas State, for a program that is normally average to better than average, like on field, that's a salty crowd, man. That is not an easy place. I'll put it that way. They like their football, and they love anything to do with the Wildcats. So you don't have to play there. Plus, as I'm recalling, that Kansas State game at Stanford, that was a night game. Which means it kicked off at like probably 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. body clockwise for Kansas State, which means they didn't end till like 1:30 body clockwise, which means they didn't land till like, I don't know, 8 a.m. Like you look down on your Casio as you're landing after playing, you're like, oh, it's 8 a.m. on Sunday. So everything you said, David Shaw, you're right. Probably don't need to say it. All right, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up with the closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments. Presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
The NFL can teach every other pro sports league one giant lesson, and I'm going outside of college football. I'm just talking about, in general, the hiring and firing process. When you have a successful head coach, don't fire him. How about learn that lesson from the NFL? The reason I'm saying this is because Major League Baseball regular season going on right now and the NBA playoffs, which are about as good as you're going to find. Stanley Cup playoffs, NBA playoffs. Tremendous. In Major League Baseball and the NBA, you can be an expansion team or you can be playoffs three of the past five seasons. Doesn't matter. You can go hire a manager or a head coach with multiple titles on his resume. And I mean, you can hire that guy right now today. In the NFL, you got a better chance of stealing the Declaration of Independence before getting Mike Tomlin out of the Steelers, okay? Sean Payton, Bill Belichick. Zero chance either was going to be your coach after they became Sean Payton and Bill Belichick. Zero chance that was going to happen. And I'd say it's pretty close to 0% either ever coaches for any other franchise. The NBA... If you're not so down with your current coach, you might be able to hire Doc Rivers in about a week and a half. The Cubs didn't win a World Series for a century. Joe Madden helps bring it to the North Side. 3 years later, their GM's like, yeah, we're going to let his contract expire. Anaheim Angels are like, we'll take him, I guess. Every other sport, it's like you get a championship coach, manager, whatever, like, not a big deal. NFL, don't come near it. It's a simple lesson. When you hire the right coach, don't fire him. On my mind right now with Major League Baseball and the NBA playoffs. So that is my closing argument, brought by the law offices of Alexander Shinara and Associates. Wherever you're at in the Deep South, doesn't matter if it's Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, wherever. If you need legal expertise, you need Alexander Shinara and Associates.
My guess is what comes next with David Shaw with that cut, just to go back to it for a second, is that, well, you know what? We've got to do it. We eat all of the coach speak about it. Nobody's going to feel sorry for us, all these different types of things. Because guess what, Chuck? He's not wrong if he does eventually make that right turn in that argument, because what can he very easily do? He could pack his team up for the week. They could stay at some resort right there, the Gaylord Texan right there, right up the road from AT&T Stadium there in Arlington, and be able to basically shut the place down, have every single conference room and every single ballroom that he needs and all that kind of stuff. And, oh, well, what about our guys in class? There's a little thing right here that I'm holding up in front of you and nobody in Radio Land can see, called a computer or an iPad or anything else, the wonders of technology that we have that will magically connect you to Palo Alto, California, for you to be able to do your online classes, which most of you probably do anyway, and be able to have you still staying on your coursework and still be able to get yourself acclimated for games. Chuck, everybody does this in the sport. We see East Coast teams in the NFL go to the West Coast, and what do? If they play somebody in the central part of the country, the following week, they are practicing all week in Seattle at the University of Washington,
and by the way,
or anywhere else.
Any athlete, coach, administrator with the University of Hawaii Athletic Department would like to say, could we have a minute?
Right.
Welcome to every day of our life.
Well, how about also, too, I mean, let's just say, for example, a team decides to go play LSU. Let's just say them, even though they're going to be a primetime game. If they weren't a primetime game, and say they did decide to kick off that game at 10:15 Eastern time, that's still different for them, where it's, hey, body-wise right now, we're going to be finishing up this game at 1 a.m., which I don't think most players actually have a problem with. I think they kind of look at it and say, huh, you know what, it's kind of fun. But here's the other part, too, that I don't think anybody is telling David Shaw. You don't have the leverage to dictate when and where you play right now. You're the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has not been relevant since the middle part of the early 2000s. And until you are relevant again, and until you do have the television eyes on you and people who care about said conference, you're not really going to have a leg to stand on when it comes to things like this.
The SEC, and now the Big Ten as well, best in college football, and you hear fans sometimes when you get an odd, like an 11 a.m. kickoff a lot of times for teams in the Central Division. But yeah, you ought to just tell TV, we're playing it too. You want to televise it, you show up. When you're at the top of the food chain, you get so much money that you can't say that to the networks. When you're further down the food chain, like the Pac-12, you're grateful for all the dollars you do get and have such a shortfall that you can't turn down any requirements. So, no matter where you fall, your response to the networks is the same. Yeah, see you at 11 a.m. Wraps it up on a Wednesday, folks. Be back tomorrow with more college football conversation right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly, because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.